Next case is 98-2664, Cleveland Bar Association versus Dale Finelli.
That's a good argument. Prosecutors could argue. She was prepared.
She didn't. You didn't check her much,
no.
Did you?
Mm-hmm. I want to
agree.
Mr. Maurice.
I'm Frank Maurice. I'm here in Severance, talking on behalf of Respondent Dale C. Finelli. Your Honors, this case basically can be distilled factually into about two subcomponents. Mr. Finelli represented the grievance you're in, Ms. Deborah Brody. In two separate incidences of representation, one about the injury case and a Lucas County divorce, which Mr. Finelli handled somewhat long distance from Cuyahoga County after fully disclosing Ms. Brody's difficulties. Each favorable result for Ms. Brody both and was billing Ms. Brody on an hourly basis. Board of representation and the divorce. There came a time in, well, characterized as mid to late 1995, where it became fairly apparent to him that he would have some extreme difficulty in collecting his fee. And it's basically at that point that he made the ill-fated decision to accommodate, in his view, some of the propositions that had been made throughout the course of representation, that there be a physical, if not sexual, relationship between he and Ms. Brody, which led up to the fateful September 7, 1995, meeting at Ms. Brody's apartment, which was reported by a radio transmitter that had been placed on Ms. Brody first by representatives of the Mayfield County Police Department, unbeknownst to Mr. Finelli. And it was discussed at the trial of this matter in September of 1998. Mr. Finelli, during that conversation, clearly offered to have Ms. Brody paid off her fee bill with him through sexual favors performed upon Mr. Finelli. At this point, I would indicate that it's not a report, and I would fully recognize that it's not part of the record. But when Mr. Finelli came to our office to have us associate on the interference fund vis-a-vis the Bar Association, we indicated to Mr. Finelli that it would be strongly in his best interest, specifically to misconduct, which he did on or about September the 17th, 1998, stipulated not only to the authenticity of the audio tape recording, but also to the fact that he, through this conduct on September 7th, 1995, violated disciplinary rule 112A6 and 112A1, respectively, engaging in conduct that adversely reflected upon his business and practice law, and acknowledging the fact that he had thereby violated disciplinary rules. That being said, at the trial of this matter, the lawyer said that ambush Mr. Finelli was an uncharged allegation that he had somehow forced the grievant to perform an act of fellatio upon her at his law offices during normal business hours, which is what respondent would characterize, to use somewhat of an analog to the criminal law, we would term that ambush uncharged allegation as essentially an answer, and that's the way that Mr. Finelli viewed when put into the context of the board's recommendations and the panel findings. With that in mind, as Mr. Fennelly's view has indicated in his objections to the board's recommendations and panel findings, that these recommended sanctions contained therein, to wit, an 18-month suspension from the practice of law, 6 months of said suspension stayed upon condition that he complete a program for sex offenders, is wholly punitive and is in no way square to the stated purpose of attorney discipline proceedings here in the state of Ohio. As indicated fully in our objections and amply supported by this court's decision on disciplinary counsel versus Trumbo and the Weaver case, disciplinary proceedings are not punitive in character. They're to determine the overall character and fitness of an attorney to be continued on the roles of attorneys and role of attorneys in the state of Ohio. It's not to enforce the criminal code. And in that regard, Mr. Fennelly will strongly suggest, implore, the court to instead view the stipulated misconduct that he engaged in, which of no small import was the only misconduct thereby found by the hearing panel, and instead view the manner in light of the pressing Wolf and Tower cases, wherein public reprimands and or state 6 month suspensions were imposed upon attorneys who, like Mr. Fennelly, had not only engaged in sexual activity or attempted to engage in sexual activity with their clients, were thereby sanctioned for violations of 11286. At this stage, one of the other objections that Mr. Fennelly has to the recommendations forwarded by the board was the fact that it seemed to place very little emphasis and or give very little credence to his otherwise unblemished 23-year career as a lawyer. There's absolutely no question that what he did on September the 7th, 1995, vis-a-vis his former client, Ms. Brody, was unethical, unsound. He has stipulated to that. He has admitted that. He has acknowledged that. He is not asking this court to, dismiss this entire action. He believes, however, that the sanction is recommended by the board is, as I indicated earlier, wholly punitive. It is not in any way, shape, or form proportional to not only the misconduct stipulated to, but also the misconduct that was actually found. At this point, I would reserve the balance of my time for a
moment. Thank you, Mr. Maurice. Ms. Brown.
The issue presented in this case is whether the sanction recommended by the Board of Commissioners is appropriate and consistent with the disciplinary process. The Cleveland Bar Association believes that it is. First, I would like to address the suggestion that the case tried to the hearing panel in September was by way of ambush. The complaint asserted against respondent contained an allegation in paragraph 3 that he had engaged in sex with his client during the course of the attorney-client relationship. It was out there denied, but nevertheless, it should have been well known to respondent that that was an issue to be heard in the case. As this court observed in disciplinary counsel versus trauma, the legal profession is one imbued with public trust. When any one of us engages in misconduct, that undermines the public trust. And in addition, when attorney misconduct goes unsanctioned or too leniently sanctions it further undermines the public trust. We agree that the purpose of the disciplinary process is not punitive. Instead, it is to determine whether a person previously admitted to the bar of the state is worthy, fit to remain on the rolls. In this case, through his misconduct, the respondent has proven himself unfit to remain on the rolls. The board's recommended sanction, which we urge the court to adopt, is peculiarly well-suited to the facts of this case. As the panel found, the respondent's misconduct took two forms. First, he engaged in sex with his client, Debbie Brody, during the course of the attorney-client relationship. In addition, he proposed to that same client that she trade sex for legal fees, a proposal that the appeal found had been made by the respondent seriously and regarded. For this misconduct, he should be sanctioned. But in fashioning the sanction, it's important to take into account not only his actions, but also the respondent's response to the grievance and the disciplinary process. As the panel found, the respondent has failed to show any remorse for his actions. In addition, he initially denied having made the proposal to Robert Sachs. Instead, claiming that it was his client who had made the proposal. Even though to take transcripts clearly provided demonstrates otherwise. He has consistently, throughout the course of the proceedings, refused to admit the sexual encounter with his client during the course of the attorney-client privilege. In defending the grievance, he attempted to portray his client as a manipulator of the legal system, a person who had improperly tried to manipulate the system to increase the settlement value of a personal injury case he was handling on her case, when his very own record demonstrated that that was not the case. And he characterized this grievance as a fabrication designed by Ms. Brody to help her avoid payment of his legal fees. Respondent's response to the grievance and to the disciplinary process calls to mind this court's observation in the Trumbo case that the attorney needed his rehabilitation as much as discipline. And the same seems to be true here, because respondent seems not to appreciate either the severity of his misconduct or his personal responsibility for it. This is shown quite clearly through his disparagement of the recommended sanction as one that's simply politically correct. The recommended sanction is neither politically correct nor punitive. Instead, it's appropriately designed to bring home to the respondent the seriousness of his misconduct while giving him the opportunity to rehabilitate himself. For these reasons, the later urges this court to accept the board's recommended sanction of an 18-month suspension with 6 months stay upon the successful completion by the respondent of a program of the sex offender. Any lesser sanction would defeat the purpose of the disciplinary and undermine the public. This is not a trial, let the case continue. In that case, the attorney did not engage in sex with his client, and he admitted his responsibility for misconduct. Nor is this case unlawful. In that case, if the attorney was actually for denying the sex, and in addition, he too admitted his personal responsibility for the misconduct. And it's not less threatening in which was consensual, and there was no evidence or even suggestion that legal services were exchanged for sex. Here, the respondent has grudgingly admitted that it was he who made the proposal to Ms. Brody to barter sex. But he has yet to take responsibility for the sexual encounter with her during the parent-child relationship. And as the panel found, he has shown no remorse for his conduct, instead blaming it on frustration, the poor economic condition of his office and his clients. Finally, the Cleveland Bar Association urges this court to find that the respondent's conduct constitutes a violation of TR 1-1283, which prohibits an attorney from engaging in illegal conduct involving moral turpitude. In Sam, in which the attorney proposed to his client that she trade sex or fees, this court found a violation of DR 1-1283. Here, the panel found that the respondent had made a serious and earnest proposal to Ms. Brody to trade sex or fees. It strained credibility that such a proposal would violate DR 1-1283 in Sam's, but not here. The Cleveland Bar Association urges this court to correct this error and avoid the confusion that will inevitably result from the inconsistent approaches by finding that the respondent's conduct not only violated TR 1-1028-1 and 86, but also TR 1-1028-3. And finally, to reiterate, the Cleveland Bar Association requests that this court adopt the board's recommended sanction of an 18-month suspension from the practice of law with this unsafe time upon the successful completion of a sex offense program. And if there are no questions, I concluded my remarks.
Thank you, Ms. Brown.
Thank you.
Mr. Maurice, you've saved 7 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. So we have leverage in the civil action, a essentially knocking a person out of the box and rendering them effectively unemployed for a year.
Well, but don't we, I mean, the issue of whether to prosecute someone or not is prosecutorial discretion. We're not bound by, I mean, if there had been a crime, obviously, and a conviction, then the rule says what happens. But the fact that the police in Mayfield Heights decide not to prosecute someone for conduct that pretty clearly is at least egregious conduct doesn't have a lot of weight, does it? I mean, we're not bound by the fact that they made some decision not to prosecute this.
No question about that, Your Honor, but that very same point that you raised takes this case out of the ambit of Sam. Because in Sam's, what that particular attorney was faced with was not only evidence upon which criminal prosecution was predicated, but also led to subsequent conviction on admittedly an amended lesser offense. But there was no criminal conduct here. That being said, in Sam's, this attorney was faced with a judgment entry of conviction. How can you come back to that? I mean, that's almost an irrebuttable presumption that misconduct was committed. Yes, sir.
A crime committed. A crime being committed or a crime being prosecuted is different than
as one that practices a lot of criminal defense, I have a hard time intellectually separating.
Let me ask it a different way. If you offer to pay somebody money for sex, that is a
problem. Yes, under the code. That's solicitation of
property. The fact that Mayfield Heights, for whatever reason, they have not chosen to indict a prominent attorney in the community, certainly is not the issue we're concerned
about. No, Your Honor, it is not.
We have before us an admitted offer today.
No, Your Honor. We have a proposal that was made by the respondents to have Ms. Brody pay off his earned post-representation through a sexual partner, which has stipulated was on it.
You're getting interested
in that. Yes, Your Honor, I am. Really admit that, but I would also admit that that's kind of our business to a certain extent is to determine the meaning of words. Again, I fail to see also relators our position that it's bad to initially deny and then later admit certain allegations of misconduct even though this is not a view that has been explicitly set forth by this honorable court, these proceedings are in a certain sense quasi-criminal in nature, and it is the relator that carries the burden of proof by a clear and convincing evidentiary standard to prove the misconduct. Here, perhaps it is telling, and I know I sound a little bit like a broken record here, but the only misconduct that was found by the hearing panel and adopted by the Board of Commissioners of Grievance and Discipline was that to which Mr. Finelli had already stipulated. There were no additional findings of misconduct made by the hearing panel or by the board after reviewing the panel's decisions. As a result, what we have here is misconduct in the form 11286, 11281, for which, again, what we would view as a wholly disproportionate sanction has been recommended by the board.
Are you on it? Let me make sure I understand. Are you refuting what I thought was finding that there was conduct that occurred during the period of representation, I guess the January event?
Yes, sir. You're standing by our clients to denial and to go take it one step further on that. We do not believe that incident was proved by clear and convincing evidence at the trial in this matter. And I would say that evidence of the relator's failure to meet that evidentiary burden is the fact that there was no finding that, there was a finding of fact that the incident occurred, but there was no misconduct found thereon. I'm not sure about that, but at least in my view, in Mr. Pinelli's view, it would sort of, it constitutes a non sequitur. You find that a bad incident occurred during an attorney-client relationship, we've got stipulations out here, we've got our client denying this, that, and the other thing with respect to that January 16, 1995 incident. And there's no misconduct found thereon, there's no penalty predicated thereon. Understanding, Your Honor, I'm tipping my hand a little bit here, and I'm giving you an area I really don't want to go too much farther into. But that being said, and seeing that my time is up, I would respectfully request that this honorable court re-examine the facts and the law as applicable to this case and sanction Mr. Finelli either with a 6-month suspension or a public reprimand. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Reese. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.